This videotape was prepared by the Vanderbilt Television News Archive in Nashville, Tennessee. The items on it appear as broadcast and as recorded off the air. The collection is open for use on a loan basis only for stated charges covering service expenses. Notice of copyright. Public Law 94-553 includes provisions effective January 1, 1978 regarding copyright in audiovisual works and the archiving of television news broadcasts. Users of the archive should be advised that some of the materials in the collection contain a notice of copyright and be guided by provisions of the statute in using material from the archive.
I believe that I have an understanding of the problem here in this state. I believe as well that a United States Senator is going to vote on matters not only of particular and peculiar importance to Massachusetts, but also to the problems that we face as a nation.
And I ask my opponent, what are your qualifications? You graduated from law school 3 years ago. You've never worked for a living. You have never run or held an elective office.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will introduce myself. I am Teddy Kennedy's brother.
Well, I'm very pleased to come here and accept your nomination. One person I want to make sure that you don't tell, and that's my younger brother.
Agenda before us. The first issue is
no autographs.
In the driving case, I have to have somebody who saw the accident, who was a witness to the accident, who was a person who saw Senator Kennedy operating this vehicle, who saw Senator Kennedy go off this dike bridge.
There is no truth whatever, to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening.
We were walking down the street in Pittsburgh this morning, and an eager woman practically knocked me down to grab Senator Kennedy's hand. She says, "Oh, Senator, we just can't wait until 1976.
I want to say, as I was introduced, I am a president of the Joseph Kennedy Foundation. My sister Eunice is president of the Special Olympics. I was elected president of the Joseph Foundation, Kennedy Foundation, because my family thought I ought to be president of something."
His coming candidacy seems almost seductive. The Irish charm and self-deprecating humor, the painful evocation of Jack and Bobby, the powerful pull of nostalgia. But there is more to Edward Kennedy than those familiar images. And for the next hour, we will report on the quality of his character, his performance as a senator, and his conduct at Chappaquiddick. Would like a documentary about him to begin. A nice walking shot of the two of them as he sets off with her grandchildren on a summer camping trip.
Can you mark it, Hawkins?
The picture is appropriate because the scene is the family seat of the Kennedys in America, the compound at Hyannisport, Massachusetts. And because her family, 4 sons, 5 daughters, 27 grandchildren, is the driving force in Edward Kennedy's life. In fact, he refers to it as the family, as though there were no other.
Not this trip. We're not going to Concord. Did you say goodbye to Grant?
Recent years, he has become its male head. For this trip, he has become its cruise director. Carefully excluding from the picture any non-Kennedy, giving up in frustration when not everyone falls in line.
Chris, well, we can't get everybody. Come on down here.
But no Kennedy camping trip can ever be just a family camping trip. Not with a driver and an advance man. Not when the route and the stops are made public. Not when the senator and the children are on almost constant display.
Well, I've indicated what my position is under change now. I've said it many times.
There has been a report that the president has asked you to accept it for vice president.
No.
This is the raw material for magazine cover stories. Less than an hour in an amusement park near Springfield gives the press plenty of time to watch and compare notes. But the Kennedys learn young there is a time and a place for privacy. The annual RFK tennis tournament is not one of them. It is a command performance for the Kennedy family and what amounts to their extended family of celebrities and politicians and journalists. It is a command performance for all the Kennedys.
Can we get the bus for the pro-celebrity?
Yes, sir, right here.
Even for Joan Kennedy, whose appearances with her husband are now so rare, the marriage seems to exist only on select occasions, that the two together not only attract the New York paparazzi, but also New York's plainclothes police. Of course, the risk of a third Kennedy assassination does cast a shadow over the senator's candidacy. The senator himself, talking at his Cape Cod home, is aware of it.
I think anyone who had at least experienced the kind of past that I have would be quite foolish not to be mindful of the dangers. I made a decision to remain in public life. I care very deeply about the things that I believe in, but I don't have a false sense of danger. I have a realistic assessment of it. I think if I'm not obsessed by it. I think if I was, I wouldn't be able to kind of perform in the area of public life. So
you mean you're not jumpy about?
It's the question of being jumpy or not jumpy. It's just the question about how you view the dangers, I suppose. And I'm realistic about them, but not overwhelmed by them.
Someone said that when you, Senator Kennedy, talk about performing a great public service, and this is not a Republican talking, but they say that the greatest public service you could perform would be not to run. And so that you would save the country this trauma again.
Well, I appreciate the concerns of people for my safety, and I don't think that there's probably any group or any people that have more of an interest in that than the members of my family, clearly. And one does what one feels that one must do, and out of the basis of deep views and deep concerns.
Over the years, Senator, how fair do you think the American press has been to you and your family?
Well, I think it's been fair enough. I think there have been obviously stories that you may wish that they hadn't been written or hadn't been reported as such, but I think I've always felt that they've been reasonable and fair to myself and to the family.
What sort of separatism should the press maintain between your public life and your private life, or any public official? Should there be?
I think there's a natural inquisitiveness of people about all aspects of people's lives. I sort of understand that.
What's the present state of your marriage, Senator?
Well, I think that we've had some difficult times, but I think we've been able to make some very good progress, and I would say that I'm delighted that we're able to share the time and the relationship that we do share.
Are you separated, or are you just how do you describe the situation?
Well, I don't know whether there's a single word that should have for the description of it. Joan's involved in a continuing program to deal with the problems of alcoholism, and she's doing magnificently well, and I'm immensely proud of the fact that she's faced up to it, made the progress that she's made, and that process continues, and that it's the type of disease that one has to continue to work on, and she continues to work on, and the program that's been devised is in Boston.
Is there a prospect that she will soon resume her life with you in Washington?
Well, we'll have the most important is for her full and complete recovery. She's made enormous strides, doing exceedingly well, and I think she's taking, and we're taking it day by day or week by week.
Senator, when you gave your television's televised speech after Chappaquiddick, you mentioned thinking that there was some awful curse that was hanging over the Kennedy family. Do you still think about that?
Well, I don't think so anymore. I mean, there were set in series of circumstances which happened in fairly rapid sequence at that time, which I think probably helped me to reach that that observation. And in the period of the last 10 years, I think life has been much more probably normal by general standards, and it's been able to reach a sense of perspective of life on it, which I wouldn't say that viewpoint is mine any longer.
The mystery of what happened at Chappaquiddick 10 years ago still hangs over Martha's Vineyard like a summer ground fog, and still is impenetrable. By his own account, Kennedy had come to Martha's Vineyard on July 18, 1969, to race in the Edgartown Regatta and to host a cookout for half a dozen young women who had worked for his late brother Robert. The cookout would be on Chappaquiddick Island, separated from Edgartown by 500 feet of water and a brief ferry ride. It would be that night, after the regatta, in a small cottage a couple of miles from the ferry, which Kennedy's political aides had rented and stocked with food and drink. It was 11:15, everyone later agreed, when Kennedy left the party, feeling tired, he said, and wanting to catch the last ferry back to Edgartown to his motel. He rarely drove himself, but this time he got the keys from his chauffeur and started off down Chappaquiddick's paved main road toward the ferry. With him was 28-year-old Mary Jo Kopechne, who had complained that she wasn't feeling well and had asked Kennedy for a ride to her motel. The senator had been over these roads several times that afternoon, but his chauffeur had been driving, and he said he hadn't paid much attention. Kennedy said he had had portions of several beers during the day and had two rum and cokes before dinner. Later, he swore that he was absolutely sober. After a minute or two of driving, the reflector signed,
the yellow line and the hard surface of the road all indicated that the main street to the ferry bore sharply to the left. But Kennedy turned sharply to the right. He said he was unfamiliar with the roads. He turned sharply to the right onto an unpaved, bumpy road leading to the Dyke Bridge. Kennedy later testified he became generally aware that the road was unpaved, but he kept going. At about 20 miles an hour, he estimated, he kept going for approximately half a mile until he hit the Dyke Bridge. Only then, he said, did he realize he had taken the wrong road and it was too late. Senator Kennedy did not report the accident or the drowning of Mary Jo Kopechne until the next day, 10 hours later. Conduct which he said was irrational, inexcusable, inexplicable, and indefensible. In addition, the judge who presided at the inquest thought Kennedy was not telling the truth, that he had meant to turn right toward this bridge. Because he chose to drive himself and did not use his chauffeur, said the judge, because Mary Jo Kopechne told no one she was leaving, and because she brought with her neither her motel key nor her purse, Judge James Boyle said that Kennedy and Mary Jo were not heading toward the Edgartown Ferry, and that Kennedy was driving the car so negligently that there was probable cause to believe him guilty of criminal conduct. So we are left with two questions 10 years later. Is Kennedy's account truthful? And why did the Martha's Vineyard authorities fail to prosecute their famous senator for anything more than leaving the scene of an accident? Kennedy himself is probably reconciled to having Chappaquiddick with him always. But no matter which questions are asked of him, he still does not seem at ease with the answers. And he still talks about Chappaquiddick in a rather bloodless third-person way, referring to his own conduct that night, for instance, as the conduct.
Well, I expect I'll be asked about the incident during the course of the campaign, and I'd be prepared to respond to any of the questions, as I have been over the period of the time that I've been in public life. I mean, I respond to any particular questions that you'd have.
But you don't think because of your rapidly changing position as a national leader rather than as a senator of Massachusetts, that you on your own ought to say something more to illuminate in people's minds what indeed went on that night, other than saying it's all in the record?
Well, I'll answer any question that you have or that you have right now.
Yeah.
I'll answer any question that you want to ask me, and I'll answer any question that is asked me during the course of a campaign.
Well, what happens, Senator, if some heckler stands up at a rally, a Kennedy rally, and says, you know, in the loud voice, red-faced, he's angry at you, and he says, Kennedy, you know, you were drinking, you lied, and you covered up. What are you going to tell him in a situation like that?
Well,
I mean, that's the way those questions will come at you, I would think.
Sure. I'll answer any of the questions that do come up during the course of a campaign, whether the if it's a particular heckler on X, Y, or Z issue. But I will answer the questions. And if you have questions right now, you ask them to me, because I'll answer them. I've answered them in the past. I've answered them completely, honestly, and to the best of my ability. And I'm glad to answer any question that you have right now on any of the aspects of it.
One of the most perplexing problems for anybody who goes back and reads the inquest record and sees the map and the layout and the time and all that, the toughest question for me and for a lot of people is, how was it that you took that right-hand turn when all signs led you to the left, the surface of the road led you to the left? How was it you could possibly have turned right?
Well, first of all, it isn't as described as all the signs led to the a different way. I was on my way back to what I thought would be the ferry and back to the Edgartown. And the difference between paved and unpaved for any one that lives on the Cape Cod or visits the island the roads are indistinguishable in most parts of the islands, and many of the areas are still the areas of Cape Cod.
But that unpaved road is like a washboard, Senator.
Oh, there. If you've traveled on the either on Cape Cod or in the islands of Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, you go from paved to unpaved, really without interruption.
You were not aware, did not figure that the main road...
was the first day that I'd been on that island in terms of... I'd been on the beach part of the island over the period of various sailing races, but that's the first the day that I'd been on the island itself.
But you'd been across that road twice that day to swim, had you not?
I'd been driven at that particular time. I was not driving during those particular occurrences. And maybe I should have recognized the difference of it. Probably I should have, but I didn't.
And you continued to believe, even though that road is rough and unpaved, you continued to believe until you saw the bridge that you were indeed on your way to the ferry?
Exactly. It's exactly right.
When you came back to the cottage after your car had left the bridge and you got Mr. Markham and Mr. Gargan to go with you, you noticed that the time was approximately 12:15 because of the clock in the Valiant in which you were riding. It later turned out there was no clock in the Valiant. How do you explain that?
Well, it later turned out that one of them, Mr. Markham, had a watch on. Whether it was, I made that the determination from what I thought was a clock in the car or looking at his wrist. I was very conscious of time at that moment, because I knew time was ticking by. I knew that every minute that passed in that was a greater sense of danger, even though, you know, I sensed internally that it would be difficult to expect that you'd have a sense of rescue, but I knew that moments were important. And whether it was from a watch that was on Mr. Markham, or whether it was from a clock, which I thought did exist in the car, I couldn't tell. I mean, clearly there wasn't a clock in the car. There wasn't a clock in the car.
Yeah. Do you think, Senator, that anybody really will ever fully believe your explanation of the
chapter? Well, the problem is from that night, I found the conduct and behavior almost sort of beyond belief myself. I mean, that's why it's been, but I think that's the way it was. That happens to be the way it was. Now, I find it, as I've stated, that I found that the conduct that in that evening and in the as a result of the impact of the accident and the sense of loss, the sense of hope, and the sense of tragedy and the whole set of circumstances that the behavior was inexplicable. So I find that those types of questions, as they applied at that, questions in my own soul as well. But that happens to be the way it was.
You've said that that the physical trauma of that accident bears really no relationship to the pressures that are brought on by decisions of public policy that you were required to make as senator. They're really separate. But what guarantee does a citizen have, or what assurance does a citizen have that in the future you would not again act, as you said, irresponsibly or inexplicably, when your own career came in conflict with the public's right to know?
Well, I didn't make that distinction. I was asked a series of questions where others drew that conclusion. But what I have pointed out is that the circumstances of that particular evening did involve physical trauma, did involve an accident, did involve enormous sense of loss in terms of the life of an individual, and did involve what I have recognized basically is an irresponsible behavior in not reporting the accident earlier. Now, I think that that is, I have served in the United States Senate for a position of 17 years. I've taken the positions, I've spoken on issues, I've spoken on questions. And there have been other factors which have impacted my life, and people will have to make that judgment.
If your object, Senator, was to tell the truth, as you said you did to the police in that statement on Saturday, if that was your purpose to get out the truth, why did you need so many people to come and help you with the television speech? What were all those advisors doing if you're at your home here, if your motive was just to lay out the truth?
Well, the
Why'd you need so much
report,
help?
No, but the accident report was a very just a factual document that on the accident itself. And because of the enormous interest in the whole set of circumstances, it was felt it necessary to give a more elaborate explanation of the circumstances that surrounded that, you know, that occasion. And I felt that my first responsibility had been to the court prior to the time of reporting to the people of Massachusetts.
But still, if all that was needed to explain to the people of Massachusetts what had happened and to present them with the political realities of what had happened, why couldn't you have done that yourself? Why did you need all those people to...
Well, the question wasn't just sort of the factual circumstances that, like a traffic accident, you go through a square and you hit a particular fender. There were obviously kind of circumstances to describe what the nature of that particular gathering had been, what the background had been of the people that were involved, and what happened that evening. There was a more fuller elaboration and explanation of the circumstance that evening.
You said once, Senator, that that whole experience had caused you to re-examine your own sense of values and how you viewed life, and that that it had changed you considerably. How did it change you?
Well, it I suppose in the sense of I've been impacted by a number of tragedies in my life, the loss of life of people and members of my family. Those were circumstances which I really didn't have control. I could feel the sense of regret, and the sense of sadness, and the sense of loss. But this was a circumstance from which I did have a responsibility. And that, in that sense, it was quite different from other life's experience. And so I'm a very different person than prior to that tragedy. The way that I'm a different person, I think, is probably reflected in perhaps the way others see myself. I can know from just my own inner views or inner attitudes or view about sort of life and people and faith in God. I'm a different person, and I know that.
It is now obvious that Kennedy and his advisors plan to volunteer nothing more on Chappaquiddick or make any attempt to clear away the lingering contradictions. So the American voter is left with three choices. One, that Kennedy's account of a tragic accident is believable and is therefore of no political consequence. Two, that Kennedy's account is not believable, but that knowing any other account could have ruined a career which since Chappaquiddick has become substantial makes it an acceptable defect. Three, that Kennedy's account not only is a fabrication, but is also a major flaw that disqualifies him from the presidency.
CBS reports will continue.